You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to ft.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 986. It's the 6th of February 2018, and it's a sea of red. There are one or two rises, but generally it's all down. But listen, this has got to happen every now and again. You know, that's a stock market. That's why it seemed as a risky investment or riskier investment than most other investments. But it's also why it outperforms. There's more risk, more reward. On the podcast today, Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vesarion, VRS, answers private investor questions. Had about 80 submitted that have shut down the survey because of so many. And Neil also talks about his appointment to the US National Advisory Board. That's the Graphene Advisory Board. Also on the podcast, Merlin Marr Johnson, CEO of Eris Resources, that's E-R-I-S, gives an update on their Swedish gold prospects and also talk about their zinc prospects in Ireland. Plus, I have Alan Green, CEO of Brandon Communications, talking about the following companies: Eland Oil and Gas, that's E-L-A, Cadence, that's K-D-N-C, and a company now crowdfunding money called Federate, and they talk about green money, and Alan describes what they're doing there. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vesarion, as VRS ticker. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's nice you're in this country, and no doubt you're probably flying off somewhere, are you?
Yeah, I'm actually in the country for a couple of days, and today I fly out to Barcelona with the government to help them out on an initiative that we're part of. So, getting used to having my passport stamped at the moment.
Yeah, well, listen, you've been on the podcast a lot. You're a very hot stock. You've done very well in the last 6 months. The stock's gone from, 14 pence or 10 pence up to over a quid. So a lot of people know about you, but there may be some people just tuning to the podcast, new to investing. You've seen the stock market crashing, and, oh, this is my opportunity to get in and invest here. So if they don't know what Vesarion is all about, give them a brief summary, if you could, Neil.
Certainly. We're an advanced materials company. We have very important partnerships with the University of Manchester and the University of Cambridge, who are shareholders in our business. And we're exploiting the new technologies such as graphene in real-world applications. Had a really, really good run of collaborations. And it's a really exciting story, given that we are starting our international expansion in China and also the US.
Yeah, well, listen, we've got a load of questions. I shut down the survey, the questions, Survey Monkey, because just too many questions. At 80 questions you had, and I thought, I can't ask all those. A lot of them duplicates, so. But we've got a lot of questions to get through. But before we get into the questions, though, I was going to say, it's been a week or so since you've announced some kind of deal, but you did announce an appointment of the National Graphene Association Advisory Board. So before we get the questions, what's all that about, Neil? Why is it significant?
Sure. I mean, it's a great honor and a great privilege. It came as I was out in China with the Prime Minister, and the National Graphene Association in the US are pushing the agenda of graphene and two-dimensional materials to US Congress. They are the most active sort of platform to be able to get news of these technologies out there. Almost all of the very large companies are part of that have an interest in graphene. And we're now on the advisory board. So, you know, little old UK company is now on the board and able to mix and to socialize with these guys, network, but also to get our point across. Yeah. And, you know, these guys, I looked on LinkedIn the other day. It's run by a great lady called Zena. And Zena was in Congress, you know. And so if we want to push our agenda, as we have done in China, we're dealing with some very, very large politicians now and, you know, some great connections and contacts. Far exceeds my expectations, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And how does that come about? You just invited, or did you apply, or what?
No. We were invited, and Zena said some very, very nice things about us. I met Zena in Tennessee in November at a conference, and you know, it's a combination of our connections within the UK with Cambridge and Manchester, and our progress that we've had in the UK. And also, you know, my knowledge of the industry and the players and what's happening. So it's great for everybody, to be honest. It's an amazing experience for me.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, let's get to the questions. And so the first one is, could Neil recommend or comment on the progress being made with the recently announced collaborations and how quickly they might move to commercial scale production? Also, is the new production facility close to being operational? This is in China, of course. Are you saying that? Is it a letter of intention, was that, I think?
Yeah, there was a letter of intent signed about 2 weeks ago. So I was obviously out in China last week as well. That was quite unexpected, and was an invitation to join at the last minute the delegation that went out there with Liam Fox and the Prime Minister. But in terms of what's happening in China, we've got bunches of lawyers on both sides hammering out a joint venture agreement. These things are very complicated. They don't happen overnight. They definitely wouldn't happen within 8 days. We've got all the right people around the table, and it's just a case now of thrashing out the details and waiting for that to be signed at the next appropriate time. It's not going to happen quickly, and to be honest, as the biggest shareholder, you know, we're very cautious about making that agreement look and sound right for us. And so if it takes a bit longer, it will take a bit longer, as long as it's right. And that's the main thing, to protect shareholder value.
Yeah. Next one. Is a 2 to 3 year time frame too short to envisage Nanine incorporated into practical applications?
In some applications, I think it's going to happen much quicker than that. And in other applications, I think it'll take much longer. So some of the quick moving sports goods and textiles, things like that, then we can see progress much quicker. In things like aerospace, then it's a little bit longer.
Yeah. Next question. How or why are you able to spend so much time on Twitter interacting with shorters of the company?
So I actually worked out, I spend about less than 3 minutes a day on Twitter because each response takes about 10 seconds and I do about 30 responses a day. I think it's important for me to be able to make sure that what is out in the public domain is factual and correct. And you know, I'm trying to protect private investors. It's quite interesting that I seem to be working 24/7 at the moment, and so I do get a little bit of time when I'm waiting at train stations or in airport lounges or stuck in coffee shops where I can research what's going on in the general market. And unfortunately, the shorters are prolific in that area, and sometimes, yeah.
You're very patient, though. I just use the block button. It's just a lot easier.
Well, I only reply to the shorters if it's in the interest of our private investors. So if there's a point there that I think is of interest and would be of interest to a much larger market, you know, our genuine investors, then I'll make the point. So I don't waste time. I always make sure that it's in the interest of the shareholders that some of this information comes out.
Okay, cool. Next question. Vesarin have numerous collaborations with major international companies, which will hopefully lead to firm ongoing orders on successful testing. Could you confirm the reason why the original first confirmed order by McLaren has not been repeated, as I'm assuming they've used all the graphene they have ordered by now.
So we're not in a position to either confirm or deny that it was McLaren. And we did get an order last January. And that's just an ongoing project. And, you know, we'd hope to replicate that. But it's kind of out of our hands. It depends on all sorts of different things, regulations and products and all sorts. So it's part of an ongoing relationship.
Cool. Every car maker in the world seems to be switching to electric cars, and there's a lot of talk about graphene will play a part in that. James Dyson is keen to design and produce one. Has he been in touch?
I can't comment on that, but they are right that car manufacturers across the world are looking at graphene as being a major source of improvement, not only in batteries, but in terms of lightweighting. And a lot of the conversations I had in China last week were all around electric vehicles. The scale of electric vehicle manufacture in China is going to be huge, which is why we need a manufacturing plant there to take advantage of this new industry.
Yeah. Is it just, I don't know how you pronounce this, Jinan, or will other provinces follow this in China, of course? Well, how do you pronounce that?
Jinan. So Jinan is part of the Shandong province, where a lot of the graphite resources are, so it makes sense to be there. But we have ongoing conversations with an awful lot of different entities, and you know, we're in a great position now. That whole thing with China came about in sort of 8 to 10 weeks, and you know, we're moving very, very quickly, and you know, we've been out to China twice now. We didn't anticipate going to China for a while because of some of the issues, but because of the political connections we've now got, it's moving much quicker than we anticipated. And we've signed this letter of intent with Jinan, but they're not the only province that's interested, and it will be part of the negotiation as to whether or not it's on an exclusive basis or if it covers multiple locations in China.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're trying to drive the best deal we can for the business, and we're conscious that it's a competitive marketplace. So for us, it's all about getting the right deal at the right time and making sure that that everything is correct.
Yeah, well, talking about being competitive, next question sort of asks that. Is how does Visarion differentiate itself from many other graphene companies? So what's your USP?
So the USP is quite clear and has been defined over the last few months. It's about the quality of the material that we're producing. It's about the level of testing and characterization we've done of the material. We're able to present people with some very, very clear, independent, verified data. It's about the commercial probabilities and possibilities of the business. Because this process is able to be scaled, because of the quality of our connections, we're in an almost unique position. Mm-hmm. The best way of being able to demonstrate that is the recent mission I went on with the Prime Minister of China, Dame Nancy Rothwell, who's the Chancellor of the University of Manchester, was there. And so we were well covered in terms of being the only graphene company on that mission, but also having our big brother with us. And Kostya, who was one of the Nobel Prize winners, was also in China with us. And it's a very, very small family. And we're the only people that have a relationship, not only with the University of Manchester, but with the University of Cambridge.
Yeah. And when you consider that, you know, some of the companies being taken on that that sort of delegation, you know, Jaguar Land Rover, that, you know, companies of that, you know, sort of size, and then they're global brands, well recognised, then it's quite impressive that you're included in that, you know, sort of small select few, really, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was worth getting on the plane just to talk and to be connected with those that were on the plane, let alone the 400-odd people that we met as a result of the 2 days intensive networking. You know, from Monday night to Friday night, I only had 6 hours sleep. So
wow.
you can imagine, you know, that it's going to take me a little bit of time to get over that. But it was absolutely jam-packed. And, you know, I'm going to start to write a blog about some of the things that that happened. But
yeah,
you know, it's quite interesting when people talk about the amount of time I spend on Twitter when you've only had 6 hours sleep over a 4-day period, then you do get a little bit of extra time.
Yeah, you know, talking about that on the plane, I mean, you're on the plane with Theresa May, weren't you? So what's the protocol there? I mean, can you just go up and talk to her? Or does she have bodyguards? Or what happened there? I mean, can you just go up to...
So we flew on the Voyager, and it's staffed by RAF, and the Prime Minister came down, made sure she spoke to every single business. It was obviously an ideal opportunity for everybody to network. We had big companies, small companies there. And it's when you're on that kind of mission, it's very much a everyone mucking in and getting on. So, to be on the plane with Jaguar Land Rover, McLaren, Norton Motorcycles, trying to think of some of the other, AstraZeneca, some really, really influential people on that plane, BP, and these are C-level people. These are not not junior engineers. These are the royalty of British industry, and we were included, and we were a late addition to that because of the deal that we did in China. And to be honest, it was the most incredible experience I've ever had, and got a lot of work to do now to catch up and to get through all of these various contacts that we've got. But it's put the business into a different league altogether.
Yeah, don't tell me you missed the opportunity to get a selfie with Teresa and one of your little robots, one of your Vasarian little robots, did you?
I did miss the opportunity. I can assure you that she's surrounded by some very, very large bodyguards. But okay. I did get a picture of the robot in various locations. So.
Excellent. Next one is, do your collaboration agreements with industries include Nanning, purchasing, licensing, royalty, or similar terms for any applications that may emerge?
We have a very flexible approach as to whether or not we're a manufacturer, a supplier, or indeed a technology partner. It all depends on the speed at which these companies and these applications move. Some of the applications that we've announced over the last couple of months, have caught us out in terms of how quickly people are moving. So some of these deals, like the IAI one, took 2 years and was part of a government mission. Other collaborations have taken place in weeks, and I'm probably the most unpopular person in the world at the moment within my team, because we're having to work really, really hard. To handle one of these collaborations is hard work. To handle five or six with a bucketful, in the hopper is going to be a big challenge. And so we're recruiting, we're building our team as quickly as we need to, we're supporting and developing, and the big thing for us now is to deliver on these collaborations. So if I do go quiet, if there isn't any news, it's not because we're doing anything wrong. It's just because we're getting down and getting on with the work that's required to make these collaborations a success.
When do you think the international standard will be finalized and published? Is this for graphene, or I don't know what this is?
This is an ISO standard which is being worked on at the moment, and we're pushing for the company to be one of the first to be accredited. We're working with all the various partners that are involved, and the timescale is pretty imminent, to be honest. So it's slightly out of our control in that we're obviously not writing the standard, but we're doing everything we can to assist and support the standard, and we're looking forward to being part of the first ones that get accredited. Now, that will move us on again another level, because we already know what the standard is going to look like, because they've published the definitions, and we also we obviously know what our material, how our material sort of fits to that standard. So what will happen is an independent body will test our material in line with the standard and give us the hopefully give us the accreditation.
So that also covers another question, so that's fine. So next one is, what are the machines you are using for manufacturing Nanning and Graphene Inc? Are they built by Vasarian or purchased from a supplier and adapted? Talks through the challenges of moving from grams to kilograms to tons, and why VRS have cracked it. I don't know if you have cracked that, have you?
We haven't cracked going to tons, but we have cracked going to multiple kilos. So when we're an engineering team that's been involved in exploiting technology pretty much all our careers, most of the team, or at least a big percentage of the team, have worked together for 25 years doing this. We used to work in automotive, where we were trying to do this, in huge volume. So the team is well skilled in developing capability to meet demand. In terms of the kit obviously the kit is very specific to what we're doing. We tend to use equipment which is readily available because it enables us to grow quickly, bearing in mind that, you know, we're trying to develop capacity in the UK, Europe, Asia, and also now America. It's important that we don't have to wait, you know, 18 months or 2 years for people to build the kit. So that was an important consideration in developing this technology and making sure that we can scale this. In terms of whether or not it's readily available, it isn't readily available, and it is adapted. And we have several mechanisms for being able to protect our IP, including the equipment that we use. As we get bigger, you know, when we first bought this business in 2014, you know, we didn't pay a lot of money for it because it was pretty much untested, but we could see that there was huge potential. And at that stage, they would make about 0.5 gram a week. Well, now our guys are making 1 kilo every shift. So, or they have the capability to produce 1 kilo every shift at least. We're moving along quickly. Now, we've always been transparent about not only the quality and the type of material that we make, but also about the quantities that we make. And while people are talking about producing tons, we've never said that we would produce tons at this stage. We produce, you know, kilos. Yeah. The China thing is interesting because they want to develop capacity ahead of demand, which is a slightly different approach to how we would do it in the West. We would wait for the demand to increase before we built the capacity. But, it's a different type of mentality in China. You know, yeah, they will create the market and they will create the demand and they'll create the supply way ahead of that because they know what's coming.
Well, do you know what? That is, like you said, the mind frame there of a potential world leader. They just assume they'll build it. People will come. That kind of attitude. You know, it's I like that. Okay, so next question. I'm sure it's not a question. It's a statement, but I'm sure you can comment off the back of it. I'm sure you have it under control. But people I know that have lived and worked in China say long-term aim of the government is to steal as much IP as possible. This would be my concern. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I guess that was the case, and there's currently a plan in place. I think it's called the 2020 or 2025 program, where China wants to be a world leader and not only manufacture for other companies, but actually manufacture their own goods, so creating their own cars, creating their own aircraft, and so on. And the mentality within China under the president has changed considerably, and what they're looking for is partnerships, and they're looking for alignment, because they know that they can't do that if they're going to just continue to steal IP. So there's a massive undertaking from the Chinese government to find good people to work with and to support those people, either financially or through IP protection. Yeah. And in China, the consequences for IP protection are terminal. So they have a slightly different approach towards legislation in China, shall we say. So if you can get them on board and make sure that that you're part of the team, then there's no doubt that they want to manufacture in China, and they want to be part of it, but they will protect you and look after IP. And we're in a very confident position that, having been involved with some of the senior ranking politicians. Again, this trip to China last week was really important because we were with Premier Li. You know, we had dinner with Premier Li, who's the effectively the Prime Minister. And we know that the President is behind this, and we know that the Party Secretary in Shandong, these are probably the three most powerful people in that particular region.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're pretty confident around IP protection.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and the next question is also about China. It says, when is the Chinese letter of intent likely to be contractual? Also, what volumes are likely to be produced in the Chinese factory, and how much revenue do you think will be made from that?
I have no idea in terms of revenue or in terms of capacity. That's because we are a technology partner. That will be down to the Chinese side of the joint venture about how quickly they develop. We will be obviously supporting them, and we'll be getting a royalty and a percentage of the profits, but the actual mechanics of running that business will be down to the Chinese management team. In our experience, that's the best way to run a business in China, because if we try to do it as a wholly owned foreign enterprise, then we will clash with the Chinese authorities. It's much better to be a partner with the Chinese authorities than try to do something independently, yeah. In our experience. Now, in terms of how quickly that will move from the letter of intent to a full contract, that will be down to the legal guys, and we're working just as hard as we can. Our CFO is driving that with our team of lawyers, with the team of lawyers on the other side. There's due diligence to do on both sides, so they want to make sure we have what, you know, what we say we've got, and we need to make sure that they're serious about that. So we're going through that process of due diligence, and that needs to be very rigorous to ensure that we protect the company. The reason that the letter of intent was non-binding is because we couldn't get comfort quick enough, and didn't want to commit the business to something that we couldn't then get out of without having done all the work. And we just didn't have enough time to do all the work before we were required to be in China. So it was our take to make sure that that didn't happen too quickly.
Okay, three more questions, nearly there, Neil. Is Vasarent receiving revenue yet from the agreements that have been recently announced? If so, are they such substantially going to boost earnings this year or for the year?
So I think the easiest thing to say is yes, we are receiving orders. All of these programs that we've entered into have been funded. We are receiving purchase orders for Nanyin all the time from universities and from research centers and from customers. We've got some very interesting things going on, but it is all very early stage and it is all very small volume at the moment until we can get applications in customer projects, then the revenues will remain being relatively small. But the rest of the business is doing well, and we're seeing a sort of slight recovery in the oil and gas industry. And AAC, the injection molding company, is busy as well. So we'll just have to wait and see for the results when they come out in March.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, you sort of covered the next one as well. So well, the last question is, are there any forecasts for future profits?
Future profits, we haven't got a broker's note in circulation at the moment. The reason for that is because the graphene element, the more conventional businesses are easy to forecast. The graphene element of the business is very difficult to forecast, and that's probably my fault, not the CFO's fault. He keeps asking me to give me a forecast of what's going to happen with graphene, and it's very, very difficult given the customers that we're dealing with, not knowing the speed at which they're going to do their side of the testing and how big the final orders are going to be. But there's some big prospects there, which means that it's very difficult to forecast at the moment. So we continue with our strategy of running a very tight ship. We don't spend anywhere near as much as other people trying to do the same job that we're trying to do. We have our conventional businesses, which are offsetting a lot of the development costs, and we try to keep the cash burn as low as possible. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we're in a position to be able to forecast, we will do. But it's very difficult at the moment, and people have to understand that we've got a very full hopper. We're just not quite sure what's going to drop and when it's going to drop, and the magnitude of that, which makes forecasting very difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. Neil, thanks for coming on, answering those questions. And like I say, you're very busy, and not a week goes by when you don't release something. So no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Merlin Marr Johnson, CEO of Eris Resources. That's E-R-I-S. Merlin, thanks for joining me again.
Good morning.
And it's on a day where we're pretty much the market is all red. So hopefully you'll bring us a bit of good news. And I know you have got some good bits of news. Since we last spoke, you've got two bits of good news. So we'll go through those in a bit. Before we do, Merlin, for people listening who are not aware of Eris Resources, just summarise what you're all about, please.
Sure. Eris is an exploration company exploring in Europe. We've got low-risk jurisdictions, and we've got a portfolio of gold projects in Sweden that are being backed by Centerra Gold, a Canadian mid-tier. And we've got a portfolio of zinc assets in Ireland that are 100% owned and funded by Eris.
Yeah, and I suppose at the moment, I'd say today specifically, gold is probably the thing to be in, but zinc also, at 10-year highs. So you're in two sort of good commodities there, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah. We've chosen them very carefully. The gold properties in Sweden, actually, there is quite a lot of polymetallic stuff. So they come sometimes with gold and copper and zinc with them. But we're happy with the market fundamentals of both commodities. There's been a lack of new projects and a lack of exploration in both of them, and we can see demand for both is strong. So very comfortable with our commodity space.
Excellent stuff. Well, listen, let's go into the most recent bit of news you released, which is the results of the 2017 drilling program in Sweden and with Centerra Gold, which is a joint venture a partner. So explain that. Take us through the details, if you could, Merlin.
Sure. We drilled two projects last year, funded. They're projects that Centerra Gold has elected to spend $1 million on each. And the first $400,000 on each was largely spent on drilling. And the first one was called Klippan. And every single hole hit alteration systems, sulfide mineralization, and some gold. And the grades were a bit mixed. The best intersection we had was 3.8 meters at 3.4 grams a ton gold. But there were large areas. We got a 20-meter intersection at lower grades, kind of 0.2. But it showed that we're absolutely in the right environment, and Centerra had no qualms, no questions. They said, right, this is really interesting. Let's go on to phase two. So we're now starting the second year of the program, and at $600,000 being spent by Centerra on the Klippan. And Karen Berriet, the second project, it was very much a scout program. There was little historic data. We put the holes in. We hit a lot of sulfide, but not a large amount of mineralization. The best results from Turing Berriet was 3.8 meters at 8 grams a ton silver and 0.8% zinc with minor gold. And again, even though the results weren't shouty, kind of huge grades, Centerra said, this is really interesting. It needs more drilling. And they're investing another $600,000 into that program.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out, for people not aware of Centerra, they're quite a big player, aren't they? They're a billion-dollar company. I mean, they've got, I'm just looking here, about 3,000 employees. I think their revenue, I'm looking on Wikipedia, but in 2014 was $763 million. So they're a big deal, aren't they?
Absolutely, yes. They're a very good partner to have. They run the Kumtor gold mine in Kyrgyzstan, and they've got a couple of other projects as well in development and in production. They're a roughly $2 billion Canadian company. They call themselves mid-tier, and they are funding our exploration program in Sweden. They like the way that we do our work, the efficiency and the prospectivity of our portfolio.
Yeah, well, listen, the next bit of news is also related to Centerra, because they elect a new gold project, and that's Brandberg in Sweden. Can you explain and take us through this, please?
Sure. Centerra has chosen a third project, which is called Brandberg, and they plan to invest $1 million in this, the similar structure as the other two, $400,000 this year, $600,000 next year. The interesting thing about Brandberg, it's got 21 holes in it already. It's been quite extensively drilled, and the mineralization in it is consistent and good. It's good grades and thicknesses from surface. So, for example, 28 meters at 2 grams a ton from surface, 33 meters at 1.8 grams a ton from surface. And these are coherent zones that hang together. When you look at the core, because it's all sitting up there in the core of sheds, it just looks great. It looks like the real deal.
Yeah.
So if you add in Centerra's spending on Brandberg, plus the spending on Klippan and Turing Berriet, and they're also funding $250,000 a year for general exploration in the area, Centerra is going to be investing $1.85 million in Sweden on projects that we co-own.
Yeah, well, listen, that's a good relationship you've got there with them. I mean, it's either the mineralization or they just like the sound of your voice. That is an excellent relationship there. And as far as Ireland's concerned and zinc, what's going on there, Merlin?
Well, we said in our news release when we listed just before Christmas that we would be drilling in Q1. So we're preparing for that. We've got the full team in place, and when the time is right, we'll give an update to the market. But essentially, the December news release talked about doing 5,000 meters in the key project area, Abbeytown, which is in the northwest near Sligo, And that 5,000 metres will test all our top rank targets.
Excellent stuff. Well, if someone's listening to this, Merlin, but not yet following the story, please give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Sure. The first reason is we've got a great team and portfolio put together in the downturn, both the team and the portfolio, and it's you can't beat that level of experience. The second reason is you're essentially buying two companies in one. We've got the wholly owned zinc prospects, zinc targets in Ireland, and for the same in the price of one company, on the valuation that we've got, you've got the whole second company, which is being funded by Centerra with this really great portfolio in Sweden. So you get two for one. And then the third reason simply is that we've got so much going on. We've got drill rigs pending and about to turn. We've got a huge amount of news flow and catalyst to drive value through 2018.
Excellent stuff. Merlin, good to chat to you. And like I say, you've got a lot going on, so no doubt we'll be chatting in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You all right, Al?
Yeah, I'm fine, Justin. I'm just dusting myself down and wiping the blood off the table after the shenanigans around the world. But
after the roof has fallen in on the stock market, I know. Yeah,
yep.
Do you know what though? It's been. I know it's easy to say now. No one can ever pinpoint when it's going to happen. But let's be honest, we've had a fantastic run, and I can't remember any substantial correction happening for at least over a year. So I'm thinking we needed this.
Exactly.
I mean, this Brexit was the last one we had, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah, we do need this. We absolutely need it. It is part of the healthy process of markets building and developing. Companies are still making money. Companies are still delivering record profits and building their businesses. That's globally. So, yeah, a correction like this is healthy because it's a rain check. It's hang on, you got too far ahead of yourselves. Obviously, it's a massive egg on face with Donald Trump, but that's just one of those things.
The thing is, it is like that. I mean, if you want people to judge you by the stock market, you've got to be able to take the flak when it goes down, because that's that's what he's always been saying, isn't it? And now all of a sudden, let me just see what he's real. Donald, let me just, has he mentioned the stock market at all? It'd be hilarious.
No, he hasn't. He's this is the thing. But he's the first president in history to actually crow about the success in the stock market, because presidents know it's such the indices can be so fickle. As soon as you put your head on the block and you say something, you can guarantee what's going to happen. Sure enough, biggest correction I think in
history, the biggest one-day drop. I find that phenomenal, astounding, really. The biggest.
I know.
I'm just thinking, to a certain extent, that is slightly worrying, because I know we've had a heck of a rise of late. But you're thinking, hang on a sec. Even in, someone just said, pointed out recently, apparently you do have big pullbacks in bull markets. They do happen. And they are actually bigger than bear markets, because bear markets just grind lower every sort of day.
Yeah,
you can have this snapback, and also people are buying the snapback, so it goes back up. It's quite volatile. But I was just astounded to see that. The biggest one-day drop, in the Dow and the S&P, I think. So astounding that.
Yeah,
Like I said, long-term, so I'm a long-term investor. And I genuinely see this. I've seen, quite a few big corrections. I was investing in .com sort of crash. So I've seen a couple of these happen. So you do get less fazed by it. And if you're a long-term investor, whereas the stock market does go up over the long term, so it's fine.
It does. But it's also an opportunity to. There are some stocks lower today than they were yesterday. Yeah. And for instance, you've got Royal Dutch Shell coming up. It goes ex-dividend on the 16th of February. And the stock has fallen in price. And it's now at a very attractive level. So you can actually pick up the stock and pick up a dividend at some 4 or 5% lower than it was last week. So that to my mind is a good thing, because I'm a long-term holder of Shell. It's paid a divvy every year since the Second World War. So what's not to like?
Yeah, but you know what? Some of the smallest,
it's a good thing.
What's annoying me is some of the smaller stocks that I really want to top up in, because I haven't got enough of. I always invest in tranches, and if this story starts to play out, which I think a couple of stocks I've invested in have. They've risen, and I want to get in a bit more. I haven't taken a big enough exposure to them, so they've come back a bit, but not enough, which is annoying.
Yeah, I know. Well, I was hoping Shell would, because I sold a block of Shell at £21, and I've kind of regretted it. I put some into funds which have done quite well, but I'm kind of thinking I'd like to get it back in there, because it's just great to see that dividend coming in every quarter. It's such a great way to sort of bring an income into your account.
BT, GSK, those are two stocks you want to get. Honestly, I think BT's update of late was quite good, and I'm in them. And they've just announced they've cut the defined pension scheme, which costs them a lot of money for managers, and they're also in discussions with the union there, CW, I think it is, Communication Workers Union, CWU, about cutting that defined pension scheme for the rest of the workers. So that's going to save them a lot of money. So I think at the moment we are seeing a bit of a bottom here in GSK and in BT. So I think big stocks, good dividend payers, you know, long term, capital rise, and nice income as well, so worth a look.
Very much so. I've held Glaxo. I currently hold Astra as well, AstraZeneca, which is also quality stock. So I'm anything like this to me, it's an opportunity to top up on those stocks. And shame I wasn't quicker off the draw this morning, because they've come back already in some ways. So anyway, there we go.
Yeah, cool. Okay, what are we talking about, Al?
Okay, I've got two stocks for you, and then I'm going to go off piste and talk about a stock that it's not currently a stock; it's a company that is currently raising money on CrowdCube, and it's a really, really fascinating software play. But I'll get to those in a second. Okay. Firstly, I want to talk about Eland Oil and Gas. Now, Eland Oil and Gas are UK-based, but they're focused in Nigeria. They've got a portfolio of upstream oil and gas assets in the Niger region of Nigeria. And their flagship project is called the Opioama. And they've spent the last 6 months developing this project and bringing it to into production. And last month, the CEO George Maxwell reported that they successfully drilled and completed the well. It had been handed over to the production team, and they're test flowing the well into production facilities at the moment. And they expect very strong performance from it going forward. And the acid test for any oil and gas company is: can they, yes, have great projects, have great assets, that's good, but can you actually successfully yourself bring those bring those assets into production? And in this case, they've done an extremely good job with the Opioama, and on the basis of the success there, they're going to invest further into that region, which will based on the enhanced cash flow and production. What was interesting here, again, this was something that my colleague Dr. David Paul at Vectorvest picked out in May last year. The stock was trading at 65p then. They highlighted the Opioama development, and the Vectorvest stock analysis system put down a series of metrics at that point with a target around 85p. The stock has hit that. It's back at around 80p today. But with the developments, with the moves technically, and with the track record that the company has in bringing these projects to market, they've now increased the price target to 108p. So again, this is a steady oil and gas play, and it's it looks set for steady growth over the year. And obviously, with the pullback we've seen today, this could be a great opportunity to get in right now.
Marvellous. Eland. Okay, cool. Anything? What else? What's the next one you said, Al?
Yes, indeed. I want to go revisit Cadence Minerals. We've spoken about Cadence on numerous occasions, and Cadence Minerals, just to recap, they are developing rare earth projects around the world, focused primarily on lithium, and they do this by investing into the companies that operate the assets and operate and undertake feasibility studies. And this is from early stage projects all the way through to late stage projects. They have a stake in Bacanora Minerals, a 9.3% stake in Bacanora, that operates the Sonora lithium project in Mexico, which is well documented. There's a Chinese company called Nexview that now own 20% of Bacanora Minerals. There's a takeoff agreement with the Japanese battery company called Hanwha. And the net present value at Sonora is currently at $1.25 billion, and Cadence Minerals have a 9.3% stake in Bacanora and in the project per se. So just on that basis alone, versus the current market cap of around 20-25 million, you can see that there is potentially an awful lot more upside on offer here, just on that project. We then go on, they have a 20% stake in the Sinovet project through European Metals Holdings. That's got a net present value of over 120-130 million. They have early stage projects, Yangibana Rare Earth Metals with Hastings Technology Metals, MacArthur Minerals, the Stonewall Lithium Project in Nevada. But most recently, they invested into the San Luis Project in Argentina, which is renowned for lithium carbonate production. It's a lithium-bearing region, and they have an option to buy up to 100% of the San Luis hard rock lithium carbonate prospects there. So there's a great range of projects, all the way through from early stage, I say, to late stage, like Sonora. Brokers have covered the stock. Hannon Partners have a buy rating with a 0.8p price targets from the compared to the 0.24p, 25p where we are now. Just purely based on the net present value and from cash flow and implied valuations across the smaller projects. But there's a lot of support from the board as well. We spoke about this last year. The directors bought a huge chunk of shares. Kieran Mazzaria bought 3.5 million shares at 0.29p. Donald Strang bought 3.2 million shares at 0.27p. And they've both entered into what's called a defined director share purchase program, where they buy, where they agree to buy shares every month for 12 months. And indeed, there was an announcement yesterday. They've appointed Beaufort Securities as joint broker and confirmed the first in the series of director share purchases. And again, with the fall last night, the stock fell back. It's come back pretty strongly this morning. I'm looking at the share price at the moment. It dipped down to 0.23p and it's already back up to 0.25p. So still at a very good level where there's great value on offer across this range of projects. If you go to the Brand UK website and look at the Cadence Minerals feed, you'll see the CEO, Kieran Mazzaria, has wrote a blog on lithium and a recent development in Chile, where SQM has said that are increasing production on a lithium carbonate mine there. And Kieran's just written about the demand for lithium. There is a perceived supply shortfall in the future for electric vehicles, and that this is why lithium is such an exciting place to be, because clearly we have all the batteries and everything else that lithium is essential for, but the electric vehicle industry really is going to be the driver for the supply, and Cadence really do have a hotline straight into the best projects around the world that are currently set to produce lithium. So there we go, Cadence Minerals, 0.25p. It's and you're buying in below where the directors bought their big share purchases back in December.
Marvellous, yeah, KDNC, yes, and the charts are going to show. We're seeing now a bit of a, it could see a double bottom here. We'll see, it needs confirmation yet, but it's tested this level before, but if it goes lower, obviously it's not very bullish there, but if it holds, could be an interesting level here. Okay, what's this third one, Al? It's on Crowd, is it Crowd Cube, you said?
It's on Crowd Cube, yeah, yes, indeed. Now, this is this is a company that that we've been sort of looking at for a couple of months. It's a company called Federate, and I'll spell that for you: F-E-D-R and the number 8. So you can just stick that into Google, and you'll see what comes up. I want you to remember this this brand. It's called Green Rain. It's a fantastic. It brings up images of the Matrix film. You may remember the Matrix film with digits sort of falling down. There's a video on the website that explains what they do and covers that. But it's they're a cloud software company.
What are they called now, again?
Federate, F-E-D-R-8.
F-E-E-D. Whenever someone says letters or numbers to me, I cannot work it out. Green Rain. Okay, go on then.
Federate are F-E-D-R-8. That's it.
Okay, Federate. Green Rain. Okay.
Yep. Okay. Yeah.
Go on.
Okay, traditionally with the cloud, large organizations have what we call legacy applications. So they have a large and diverse array of software applications to operate their company and their systems. 10 years ago, you'd have maybe, I know with the companies we were involved with at that stage, your operations would be based in a server room. But of course, now everything's on the cloud. And there's an explosion in growth in this area. Amazon Cloud saw a 45% growth in the demand for services last in quarter four 2017. The newer Microsoft Azure service saw a nearly 100% increase in growth in quarter four 2017. Global market is reckoned to be about $180 billion, up from $145 billion last year. So added to this, 90% of chief execs in large organizations are in the process of trying to migrate to the cloud. But with all these legacy issues, you've got these diverse software applications around. We've seen the impact of those and how it can impact on us through the problems you may recall with NatWest and RBS when the systems kept on crashing. There were problems with the apps, and this is largely because they're trying to migrate services to the cloud without being able to. So in comes Green Rain. Just go back. The other issue with that is that there are huge amounts of.
Hello? Hello?
Make cloud ready.
Sorry, I broke up. There's a huge amount of what, sorry?
Justin?
Yeah, you broke up then. I couldn't hear what you said. There are huge amounts of what, you said?
There are huge amounts of man hours involved in migrating the applications to the cloud. So what does it interrogates the software or the applications at code level, and it basically comes up with a map of what needs doing where, and it saves weeks, months in terms of man hours because it gives you a plan of how to move your application or your software estate up onto the cloud. Now, Green Rain's already won multiple industry awards. It's got a very much a blue chip board in this area. You've got the CEO is a guy called Damien Grief, who was he's been director on a number of UK PLCs, including Nastar, you may recall. You've got Michael Welling, who's the founder and CEO of AppDNA, which he sold to Citrix in 2011 for a I think it's $1 billion sum. You've also got a guy called Derek Ward, who is on the board of Atos, which are a global digital group currently sponsoring the international or the company partner with the International Olympic Committee. Now, Federate are raising £400,000 at the moment on CrowdCube. You can go and look at the listing there. They've got a pre-market valuation of $7.9 million. But there is such a massive demand for this, and the issues of time and man hours are absolutely crucial. And there's nothing really around in the world right now that can offer the solution. So this is a really, really exciting, great British software company that there's an opportunity to get involved in. So go and look at Federate, Google Federate, and then go and take a look at the CrowdCube listing. Well
yes,
worth it.
Yes. Well, if you do Federate and Green Rain, it does come up in Google. So it autofills, yep. Autofills for you. So marvellous, Al. Thanks for that. And we'll speak next week, fella. And hopefully a bit warmer. I'm in my office at the moment. I'm freezing even with two heaters on. It's not good.
Well, hopefully it'll be warm, and hopefully all of us will have bought into stocks at these fantastically low levels, so we can benefit from the upswing that I'm sure will come at some stage in the next few weeks.
Lovely. Cheers, Al.
Cheers, Jeff.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, UK Oil and Gas. At four, Weatherly International, WTI that is. At three, IQE, ticker is IQE. At two, Active Energy, AEG. And number one, most followed company, was a company I wrote a blog on yesterday. It's called Ferrum Crescent, that's FCR. And in fact, one of the few risers today, along with EVRH in my portfolio. Okay, top five most liked RSs are as follows. At five, Ascent Resources, issue of equity. At four, UK Oil and Gas, update Bradford Bridge 1. At three, Hollands Natural Resources, East Denver well hits 100,000 barrels production. At two, STX Energy, update on ONS 7 well, Morocco. And number one, most liked RNS was from Asia. Sorry, bit of windy pops here. Asia Met Resources, that's ARS, index high grade copper mineralization at BKZ. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.